Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, September 21st. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us once again to answer your automotive questions is Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your car calls right now at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Now, this always a popular program, so I advise you to get those calls in early. 800-348-2551 if you have a question. You may also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. We will definitely try to read a few emails, maybe not all of them, but again, get those in early as well. Gordon Fricke is here. Your calls are coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call and talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon, and we welcome back Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for more than 30 years, and we welcome your calls right now at 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email the program voxpop@wamc.org, but again, the number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke, welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Oh, the horror story you just told me about motor oil.
Well, you know, we talk about motor oil a lot, and they're really good calls, and it's nice that people are concerned. And what I'm seeing, the trend is more and more vehicles are consuming oil, which is normal, but they're using more oil than people are accustomed to. And I think, on the other hand, nobody's checking their oil very often at all. There's no place to get your oil checked. You used to be able to do it at your service station. An attendant would ask if they could check your oil. And it was all about selling oil for the company, but it was very critical that, you know, some cars needed a couple of quarts of oil.
Right.
So I had two just this week that came in making noises. And the first one I took a ride with, the young guy, and he said, here, it's just beginning to make the noise now. And I happened to look at the oil pressure gauge in this vehicle, and the gauge was kind of fluctuating, which you normally don't see. And in the back of my mind, I said, we're low on oil. Drove it back, let it sit for a few minutes, needed 3 quarts. It holds 5. So it had 2 left.
Wow.
Same thing this morning. This vehicle holds 6, and it needed 4.
Yikes.
So both of them seem to survive this okay. But I think another day of driving probably would have been a serious issue if they hadn't stopped.
Now, why are vehicles now going back to consuming more oil?
Yes. In the early years, it was simply fairly high tolerances in engine construction. And I'm talking 40s, 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
Things really tightened up in the 80s and 90s. Tolerances got tighter. Materials and metals got better. Piston rings and all the sealing became really good. And there were cars that didn't need any oil virtually between oil changes. You'd hear people say this car doesn't use a drop of oil. Well, they really did use some oil, but not enough to measure. Now, due to increases in fuel economy pressures, the car makers, the engine builders, have discovered that if they make the engine turn over easier, less friction, it will save gas because it'll develop more power and there'd be less friction.
Yeah.
And they've done it by loosening up the tension on the piston rings. And they're critical to seal the combustion gases, but they also keep the oil in control, which is on the bottom side of the piston.
Ah.
So they're letting more oil slip by them because there's less tension on them. Consequently, the engine uses more oil.
Old-timers like us, we had old cars in the old days, and we checked our oil often. For those in our listening audience, and there may be several who have never checked their own oil, you check your oil hot or cold.
You can check it either way, and there's a range on your stick. And there's usually a mark, add full, and you want to be between those marks. You like to be at the top. If the engine is dead cold, it might be more towards the bottom because things expand when they get warm. So you can check your engine hot or cold and keep it between the marks, preferably towards the full mark.
I usually, in my learning how to drive and take care of a car, my father said, oh, you check it when it's warm.
Yeah, he was fine. He was that's perfectly fine. Yeah. And I think if you looked in some owner's manuals, there might be some recommendations to do it at operating temperature.
Yeah.
And then the engine wants to have been sitting for a minimum number of minutes. Some high-end, like Porsche, says 20 minutes.
Now, why would that? Why would you need to do that?
So all the oil that's in the engine, in the upper parts of the engine, after it's been running, the oil finds its way to the pan and settles, and that's your true level reading.
So warm, but wait 10, 15 minutes.
Yes, so the engine, and be on a level surface. That's very important.
Don't check your oil on a hill.
Yeah,
fair
exactly.
Enough. All right, Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we'll go right to the phones at 800-348-2551. We start with Scott in Woodstock. Scott, you're on.
Well, hello there. Thank you very much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I've got a 1963, let me get you off speaker here,
good,
track loader. It's not a car. It's a construction vehicle, John Deere, where they apparently, somewhere along the line in its history, converted it from a positive ground to a negative ground system. And I suspect they put an alternator in as a result or as part of that process. But I'm wondering why, A, would they do that, and, B, should I be worried in putting it back to its original configuration?
Yeah, okay. That's an interesting question. Is this what they consider a crawler, a John
yes,
Deere crawler?
Exactly.
Yeah. So there's no
crawler.
No blade on it.
It's right, a big tooth bucket in
yeah.
the front.
Okay. So is this a gasoline or a diesel?
It is a diesel.
It is, okay. Back in the day that tractor was built, everything for the most part was 6 volts. So, and 6 volt systems were a little bit lazy because getting those vehicles started in cold weather was trouble. And that 6 volt battery just didn't have enough oomph in it.
Yeah.
And so it was very common to convert stuff like that up to 12 volts. And if that crawler was having issues with charge and keeping the battery charged because it came with a generator, it was common to convert those to an alternator. And the most common conversion was an AC Delco single wire alternator because they require no wiring. You bolt them on, you get your pulleys aligned, and you run a big fat positive wire right to the battery.
So it just goes in instead of the generator.
Exactly, and it takes care of itself. It maintains voltage. It does a wonderful job charging. If that vehicle is running fine and your battery is staying charged, keep it definitely at 12 volts. And if you have lights on it and you ever need it in the dark, the 12-volt lights are going to be way brighter than the original 6-volt lights.
Gotcha.
So I'd leave it.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Okay, man. Thanks a lot for the call. Back in the old days, the my first car had a generator. And what's the advantage of having an alternator?
The generator doesn't create the charging volts and amps at low RPMs like an alternator does. So generator cars at idle don't charge very much, and you'll notice the lights are dim. If you increase the RPM on an old car, a 50s car, 40s car, the lights would get a little brighter as the engine speeds up. And it was just a less technical, less efficient way to get the battery charged and keep the system running.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Mark in Salem. Mark, you're on.
I have one of those famous check engine lights problems. I have a 2006 Toyota Scion, little hatchback, four-cylinder, has about 105,000 miles on it, been kept, tuned up and regularly changed of oil and everything. When I use the standard gasoline with ethanol in it, gradually the check engine light will come on and stay on. If I switch over to high octane, like it's the Stewart's gas at 91 octane with no ethanol, the check engine light goes off and stays off. What does that represent in terms of what might be wrong with a car or what is indicating what's causing that?
Do you know what the code is when it turns the light on?
No, I do not.
But your experience is the light comes on, you switch fuel, and the light goes out after a little while.
Yeah, I fill it up with, from near empty tank, I fill it up with a non-ethanol gas, which is not a problem because a car gets such great mileage. It's only a couple of dollars. I mean, it takes $20 to fill it.
Yeah.
And I get about 40 miles to the gallon if I don't horse it. And it has some kind of a supercharger on it, too. It's a nice little car. It's my mother's car. She can't drive anymore, so I use it as mine. But it only does it when I use an ethanol gas. If it doesn't do it, this is a more recent phenomenon, but it's been going on for about a year. And I've been just keep the loading it with the high octane gas with no ethanol.
Yeah, it would be interesting to know what the code is, and that would help me determine what the gas is doing to offset the problem.
Okay, so could it be a sensor, one of the sensors that is clogged, or fuel injectors that are dirty, or
probably not? And you know, the check engine light is driven on by some type of an emissions fault, or what the computer thinks could be an emissions fault. If that car runs great and that light stays off with the 91 ethanol free, continue to use it.
Yeah.
Because two reasons. You're going to get slightly better gas mileage with the non-ethanol gasoline.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, the alcohol actually gives you poorer fuel economy. So
I have better, more pep with it, too.
Yeah, so I think the trade-off is a little slightly better gas mileage, slightly better performance, and the check engine light stays out. I think I'd stay with it 100% of the time.
That's what I've been doing.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't think there was anything seriously wrong with
no,
it.
No, there isn't.
If
the light stays on and never goes off, you got to see why it's on. But the light going off by itself means the computer was happy.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. And we'll be right back.
Support comes from Jay's Art Shop, downtown Bennington, Vermont, featuring art supplies, custom picture framing, art gallery cards, gifts, and fashion apparel. 45 years in business. Jaysartshop.com. Stone Soup Concrete, specializing in handcrafted and environmentally sound concrete countertops, sinks, furniture, and floors, serving the Northeast since 2001. StonesoupConcrete.com and on Facebook. Sheehy Opticians, Albany, providing eye exams and eyeglasses, including Bevel, LaFont, and Pro Design, progressive lenses from Verilux and Nikon, and Maui Jim, Costa, and Ray-Ban sunglasses. SHEEHYOpticians.com. The Gift Garden, Bennington, Vermont. Florist and gift shop featuring fresh flowers, arrangements, green and blossoming plants, home decor, candles, gift baskets on Main Street. TheGiftGardenVT.com. And Nine Pin Cider, Albany. Hard cider made from local apples. Tasting room features New York cider, beer, wine, and spirits Tuesday through Sunday. Now available in Massachusetts and Connecticut. NinePinCider.com.
Hey, the fun drive is coming in October, and the lockbox is open now at WAMC.org. If you want to shorten the on-air drive, go ahead. Hit up the lockbox. Make your pledge now, and we'll shorten that drive. Drives have been very brief, day or two now, because the lockbox is so successful. So
that's working.
Then you get more Gordon Fricke.
Absolutely. So definitely contribute to the lockbox.
Gordon Fricke is our guest. It's Vox Pop, 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Let's go to Mary in Ankrum. Mary, you're on.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a Ford Fusion Hybrid. It's a 2010, and it has about 125,000 miles on it. And my question to Mr. Fricke is, would it be better if I could trade it in for a newer, a low-mileage hybrid, or if he thinks I should hold on to it for as long as I can, because my mechanic believes that I can get maybe 300 miles out of it, 300,000 miles on it. But my other mechanic says that the battery for the hybrid part of the engine could go and need to be replaced, and it's a very, very expensive part. It costs about half of what a new car would cost just to replace the battery for the hybrid.
Is that true?
So... Well, I don't know. That's my question for you. I'm not that good about cars. I kind of go by my mechanic. And the mechanic who said that the battery was very expensive was a retired mechanic. The guy who says to keep the car for 300,000 miles is my current mechanic.
Yeah. Both guys are kind of correct in the sense that sooner or later, the hybrid batteries will wear out. They'll time out, and you'll need new ones. And they are quite expensive. However, they are coming down in price because they're starting to be available through more suppliers than just the car maker. Toyota, for example, with Priuses in the early years, if you needed hybrid batteries, it's the only place you could get them.
Right.
I'm seeing them available now through Interstate, which is a big battery
reputable
supplier.
Reputable battery maker.
So early on, the estimates were, I think, $3,000 to $4,000 for batteries. I haven't checked because I really don't encounter very many hybrids, and I don't see them late in their life to where they need things like this. So, yes, you're going to be faced with batteries if you keep the car long enough. They seem to be lasting at least 10 years nowadays. So if yours is a 2010 car, you're not there yet. The car will experience other problems like any other motor vehicle as it ages. And I'm always concerned in the Northeast where we have salt corrosion issues. Structural when the car gets older, maybe some fuel and brake lines. But the car makers are getting better with coatings and using non-ferrous metals and plastic, so you don't have that as much as you used to. But, the car will eventually need other things. When it needs it is a very tough thing to predict. But if your guy says this car is still in phenomenal shape and you don't want to get a new car, I would certainly go another year and see what happens.
I think we've left her silent.
I hope
are you still there, Mary? Okay.
I hope somebody heard us.
Well, I'm not sure she's satisfied with the response.
Bad answer.
Speaking of undercoating, every time you buy a new car, you get the song and dance from the dealer. Hey, we got to put the undercoat on. It's going to save you a lot of blah, 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 blah. True or not true? It's always very expensive.
Partially true. The products have improved, and it really lies heavily upon the guy or girl or whoever, the person applying the product. And sometimes at the dealership, they are hurried to get the car out and delivered and gone.
Yeah.
And the job needs to be done very carefully, very thoroughly. My advice is, a friend of mine bought a new truck last year, and he said, I want to keep this truck for 10 years, and I want to do all this stuff.
Yeah.
I said, what you should do is seek out the guy applying the undercoating, and you slip him $50, and you say, please do a job on this truck like it's your own. And you don't have to give him 50, but make it, give the guy a tip and he'll coat that truck like it was his own.
Well, if you buy a vehicle at a dealer, any dealer, not singling a dealer out, and you want to buy a DVD player for the back, oftentimes the factory DVD player will be a lot more expensive than going to an aftermarket,
right,
and where you get a better deal.
Yes.
Do they have that with undercoating?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And there are some new products out. You remember years ago you heard about Z-Bart and
sure.
Rusty Jones,
yes,
and all those guys?
Yeah.
Well, there are products out, and there are independent shops applying them. And you may be completely better off skipping the dealer's proposal and getting it done locally, privately, to somebody you're going to be able to see and talk to, quite possibly the guy applying it. And that's when you say, I'm really concerned. In the past, I've understood that if you don't really do a good job and coat these cars properly, that's when the trouble arises, and convince them to do a really good, thick, thorough job. And it does help, yes.
I would think that any new car you buy in the Northeast, as a matter of course, should already have it.
Cars now are coming with much better corrosion protection than they used to. And the Europeans are still 100% on top of the corrosion game. Okay. Those cars don't rust and corrode.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. We go to Don in Tanazoo. Where's Tanazoo, Don?
It's Tannisville, and it's near Hunter Mountain.
It says Tanazoo on our sheet here. I thought that was a new town in New York. Anyway, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Yeah, okay, listen, what's the story with if your car comes with to change the oil, synthetic oil, and then you want to switch back, say, a year later into motor oil? Is that going to harm the engine?
Can you give me the year, make, and model of the car in question, or is this just in general?
Well, I'll give you the car, but it is in general. A 2015 Honda CR-V. It recommends synthetic oil.
Yes.
And I was kind of concerned if I can switch back to motor oil.
Yes, it's a good question, and here's the reason why. All cars today, I say all, virtually all engines have what's called variable valve or variable cam timing. and they are using the engine's oil to operate things to change the profile of the camshaft and the timing of the valves for efficiency, power, fuel economy, the whole deal. And it's totally reliant upon the engine's oil. So if the oil is way too thick, it's going to cause problems. If the oil is way too dirty, it's going to cause problems. And synthetics are holding up better and longer to the way today's engines are designed. So my advice to you is to use exactly what the car manufacturer calls for and stick to the viscosity, which seems to be, to old school guys, very, very thin today. But
yes, it is.
But you need to, that, like that car is, it calls for a 0-20 motor oil.
Wow.
And that's
crazy,
what you, that's
right?
What you need to put in it, because they really do work well with that stuff.
Even in all weather conditions?
Yes. Whatever the book or the manual comes with the car will tell you, depending on your temperature. You know, if you're in let's say Phoenix, Arizona all summer, they're going to give you a heavier option, but that heavier oil is not going to be good for the Northeast in the middle of the winter.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, Don, you good?
Yes, I am good. Thank you very much.
And good luck.
Very informative.
Good luck in Tanazoo, my friend. We appreciate it. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Mike in Richmond. Mike, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking the call, guys.
Sure.
I have a 2002 Mini Cooper S, first generation with the supercharger, and my mechanic is diagnosing a very minor oil leak. He thinks coming from the main rear seal in the tranny. And obviously, this is a huge job. So he suggested, before we go down that road, expensive road, to try one of the stop leak products. And I researched them online, and I'm going to go ahead and try this. My question is, the car sits over the winter. It does not get driven over the winter. And so it's got like a month left on the road. Am I better off doing it now and letting it sit in the engine all winter long without the engine running at all, or am I better off waiting till next spring when I change the oil and adding it at that point?
Good question.
Yeah, I think you're going to drive this car at least another month, aren't you?
Well, I have three Minis, so it doesn't. This is a track car. It doesn't see a lot of road time.
Yeah.
So it may only get driven another 50 miles the entire rest of this year.
Well, that's a good question then, because if this car was going to be driven another month solid, let's say you got to put another 1,000 miles on it, I would definitely put it in now and see what you're getting for results. It'd be nice to know if this stuff is calming it down. And it might. Oil seal technology has changed, but that Mini of that vintage, I believe, is still using what you'd consider a conventional, like a double lip seal, which used to be made out of rubber, but it's not, you know, it's neoprene and other things. And it's possible that that product will improve it. A lot of your newer cars are using a single seal that doesn't even look like a rear main anymore. And you actually install those bone dry, so that product is not going to help those at all. So maybe
right, it's a different chemistry.
It's a different material and design. And,
yep.
But for you say yours was an 02?
It's an 02 first generation. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you want to wait till spring then if that car really is done for the year.
Okay. Can I ask a quick question about winter storage on it?
Yeah.
Sure.
So in the past, the mice like to get into this car. It's covered in the garage. I try to, I put stuff in the exhaust. I try to take all the holes out of the equation, but they find a place to get in. And their favorite place to nest is in the cabin air filter.
Oh, yeah.
And, it's a real mess to deal with the smell in the spring. So my question is, if I take that filter out for the winter, am I just encouraging them to find a more damaging place where they're going to damage some wires, and should I just live with the hassle, or what do you think? What do you think I should do?
Well, if you take that filter out, that's giving them a massive hole to jump right in the car. Why don't you try to effectively plug that? Because that's where they're getting in. They're going to gnaw through that cabin air filter and get inside the car.
Right, but I can put traps inside the car. I don't mind them being inside the car because then I can open the doors and I can see them. My concern is if they get discouraged from the lack of having that nice soft filter to nest in, are they going to try to go someplace else where they can do more damage electronically?
It's possible because we've gotten cars in with a lot of wiring damage from rodents gnawing through different things. So maybe you could put something under the hood that maybe you've tried this to keep them out of there. And, you know, everybody's got their theory about what to do.
Yeah.
Peppermint, mothballs, dryer sheets, you know, the whole deal. But, yeah, that's
I
a big problem.
A cat and I'll put a cat in the car for the winter.
There you go.
That would do it.
Make sure you feed the kitty cat, yeah. though. All right, let's go over to Gene in Schenectady. Gene, you're on.
Hi, Hi. I have a 2017 Volvo. The dealership maintenance service recommendation is one oil change per year or 10,000 miles. Listening to your earlier suggestion regarding oil, what is your advice?
How long do you normally keep your vehicles, or do you think you're going to keep this one?
I would like to keep this one a good 10 years.
Okay. If you're on a 10-year plan, which is 100% fine and doable with your car, personally, I would be cutting those oil changes right in half, because unless you're doing a beautiful, easy commute where the car starts up in the morning and maybe drives 20, 30 miles and shuts off and then does the same thing on the way home, you could maybe stretch that mileage out of the oil, but it's too much. And we've discussed it many times on the show. It's pressure, EPA pressure to keep the engine oil in the crankcases longer for pollution concerns, which I totally understand and get. But for the better of the engine and the life of the car, I would cut those in half. That's my recommendation.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Gene. We appreciate it. Gordon Fricke is our guest here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Jim in North Pownell. Jim, you're on.
Hey, Ray. Hey, Gordon.
Hey.
How are you?
Good to talk to you. I drive by your place every time I go to my girlfriend's house in North Hoosick.
Oh.
I got a hint for the guy that had the question about the 6-volt battery in the tractor. If he switches up to an 8-volt, he'll get better oomph out of it without having to change the alternator, and that comes right from my Ford mechanic over at Capital Tractor. So that's something to think about.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
I have a question about oil. I've got two cases of 1030 that are left over from back, you know, 10 years ago, and I've got two vehicles. I got a 98 F-150 and an 03 Subaru that call for 520. Would it do damage to the vehicles to switch to 1030 from 520?
No, though the vehicles of that vintage, I don't believe it's going to bother them at all. In fact, if you looked in the owner's manuals of both of those cars, probably that weight motor oil is listed in there as an optional oil depending on your temperatures. So on a variable valve car like we were just talking about earlier, a late model vehicle that calls for 0-20, for example, first of all, what you've got there's not synthetic, and that's what most cars or a lot of cars require today. But no, I think you'll be fine using that oil.
All right. I'm going to use it up then.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
You too. Let's go over to David in Rensselaerville. David, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Yeah. Hey, Gordon. I've got a crazy question. Is it possible to use my Prius as a source of energy for the house, like a generator?
Well, the Prius... I don't think you could tap into that car and effectively convert the voltage to your house, which is 110. I'm not sure.
That's basically my question.
Yeah. Now, you can charge the Prius. Well, actually, yours is probably not a plug-in, though. What year is your car?
No, it's 2012. It's not a plug-in.
It's not a plug-in, yeah.
No.
I think by the time you made the conversions and tried to power the house by using the Prius, which you then have to run the engine to charge.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a problem. I'm just thinking
as a generator,
using it in an emergency.
Right. Well, they make inverters, but the problem is if you use your accessory jack, you're not going to get a lot of amperage out of it and be able to run too much stuff.
Exactly.
No. I just wondered if it was at all possible, and should I just where would I get this stuff from?
Yeah.
From the British, from Toyota, or?
I'm sure an electrical engineer, particularly automotive related, could easily do the math to figure out how to tap into that car and provide the house. The only problem is it's DC current and your house is AC current.
Well, that's
current.
Why they make inverters yeah. for just this. But the thing is, a refrigerator, let's say, would take much more than your average accessory jack, lighter plug in a vehicle.
Yes, you're absolutely right, Ray. Yeah. That would kill it.
Yeah, it might be dangerous.
It's sort of an impractical question.
You could run lamps and stuff like that.
Oh, sure. I mean, they do make inverters, and you can find them at auto parts stores.
Yeah.
But I would be careful. I would do some research before you run the fridge on that.
Yeah. But you're right, Ray. Ray, you're right on. You could definitely run small stuff.
Like a television? And
I don't know.
Well, the new TVs are very low current draw, the flat screens.
As long as it's an LED,
right.
Yeah, not a plasma or something like that. But
well, good luck, David. Don't burn the car or anything else.
I could always spend the night in the car instead, I guess.
There you go.
You make a point.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're going to take a break here, but thank you very much. Our number is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest. We'll be right back.
Support comes from the Henyon Bakery, Amherst. Since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Dr. Lucy Chapik, Latham, New York, announcing open house October 19th from 5:30 to 7:30, a plastic surgeon dedicated to aesthetic cosmetic surgery and skincare since 1996. CAPEKplasticsurgery.com. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, giving children the education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world. WaldorfSaratoga.org. Jane Iredale, a mineral makeup company specializing in makeup that is good for the skin. Jane Iredale Retail Shop at Louisa Ellis Boutique, Great Barrington, janeiredale.com. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, partnering in preserving historic New York through advocacy, education, grants, and loans. So our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, joined today by Gordon Fricke as we answer your automotive questions. And the lines are loaded, but the next time you hear someone hang up, that's your cue to call at 800-348-2551. Let's go to Mark in Del Mar. Mark, you're on.
Hi. I think you already answered my question, which was about how you felt about going 10,000 miles with fully synthetic oil. It sounded like you weren't too enthusiastic about doing that.
Yeah, and the reason I say that is I see the ill effects of oil changes that have gone too long on higher mileage engines. That's when you have the trouble. You can do the 10,000-mile intervals in the car's early life, but when you own the vehicle in its later life, 80, 90, 100, 120,000 miles, those deposits that have been accumulating slightly over all the years now build up to big problems and could be very expensive problems. And I did a little checking a while ago, and Porsche did some talk about what they recommend for changing oil and filters. And even though they publish these high intervals because they maybe kind of have to, they're saying we still recommend 3,000 to 5,000 miles on all our vehicles.
Interesting.
That's what we recommend.
So the advertising says one thing, and the recommendation is another.
And this is an engineering recommendation, not in their manuals.
Very, very interesting. Yeah. Mark, thanks for the call. Gordon Fricke, our guest today, 800-348-2551. Bob in Middletown. Bob, you're on.
Hi, guys. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing.
And thanks for your great show and the radio station.
Thanks.
Appreciate your service.
We appreciate it.
You partially answered most of what I'm talking about. I'm on the oil consumption kick, too. I got a 2011 Buick Regal from the old school, so I got out of the habit of checking oil because I never had to. And I've got an idiot light, so I don't have a warning. When I know I'm low on oil, if I'm not checking it regularly, I get the valve tapping that you were talking about.
Yeah, that's not good.
And you kind of nixed going to the heavy oil. I was going to ask about that. And STP, I guess, is out of the question. I'm an old STP guy.
Why is that out of the question? They still make that, right?
Yes, but...
Well, it's heavier, right? It's thick.
That's the thing.
Maybe that wouldn't work with, like you were talking, it would dial up the performance of the engine.
That's
it.
I
gotcha.
The variable valve timing doesn't want thick oil.
No, I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So then I said, well, I'll just double the time. You know, I'm putting new oil in all the time. Every 3,000, I got to probably put 2 quarts in. So I was thinking maybe I'll just stretch it out, but that's not going to work either, correct?
Stretch out your oil change intervals?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I know the theory because you're putting fresh oil in every. Do you think you're using a quart every 1,000 miles? What did you say you're putting in it?
I'd say close to it, yeah.
Yeah. What year is your car?
2011.
Because some car makers have had concerns about overconsumption, and they will address the problem. And is yours a four-cylinder?
No, six.
V6, okay. Some GM four-cylinders were having lots of trouble, and GM was extending the warranties on those.
How would they address the problem, though?
Well, what they do is they bring, if you're concerned of oil consumption, they bring you in. They do a bunch of tests to make sure there's nothing externally wrong or the vent system isn't drawing oil out of the engine. And then they change your engine oil, mark it, and then they give you a little chart, and you check it at intervals and note where the level lies. And then if it uses too much oil in a predetermined time, they'll do engine repairs for you.
Thanks, Bob. But my question is, what repair could they possibly do if it's a design flaw?
They have improved, in some of these engines, it's a piston and ring assembly improvement to calm the consumption down. It's not going to put it back to zero, but it's going to get it better than what you're experiencing.
All right, let's go over to Rich in Fishkill. Rich, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Yeah, how you doing today? I've got a 93 Volvo 940 with a non-turbo, and I just changed the timing belt on it. Are you there?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, we're here.
Okay. I just changed the timing belt on it. The tensioner pulley went, so I changed the belt while I was in there. And I'm trying to find out what the timing spec is on it. I've been going online. There's lots of videos telling you how to change the timing belt, but none of them tell you what to set the timing at after you're done changing it. I just went to Volvo. Volvo couldn't even tell me. They were like, oh, it's too old. We don't even have it on the computer.
So what year is the car again?
It's a 93 940 with a 2.3 non-turbo.
So this,
just, you know, is it 6 degrees before top dead center? Is, you know, I got the timing light, so, you know, it's got a slotted distributor. It's got the marks, you know, on the block, so it obviously has to be timed.
Yes. However, it's non-adjustable. It's preset and fixed, and the computer takes everything over. Unless you've moved.
Is it in 93?
Yes. Yep. Really? I don't believe on that car you do any turning of the distributor with a timing light. And that's an old school device nowadays because no cars even have spark plug wires anymore. But So have you put the light on it? Can you still shine it on the crank pulley?
I haven't tried it yet. I mean, I could throw it on there and just see what
where it is.
Set at.
See where it is, and it's probably perfect.
It's probably perfect.
I bet it is.
It looks like it's got a slotted distributor, and it's got the marks on the block, you know, to set the timing. So you would just, I don't have a manual on it, so I just automatically thought that I had to set the timing on it.
What they've done
is, not the case.
When they evolved to the computer doing all the timing, the distributor was still there, and it looked like the kind that you still moved, but when you turn them, nothing happens.
Gotcha.
So try that, and I think you're going to be fine.
Thanks, Rich. We appreciate the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551, and this email came in from Jay in Kingston. It says, two questions, both oil change related. A lot of oil questions.
Yeah.
First, my 2000 VW Passat with 290,000 miles. We drive this car about 4,000 miles a year now. How often should I change the oil in this vehicle?
He puts 4,000 a year on the car?
Yep, it's got 290K.
Well, it's been a good car.
Yeah.
And he must have taken good care of it.
Yep.
I would definitely do it once a year.
Okay.
Maybe twice a year is too much, but for sure once a year.
If you want to keep it, why not?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, second question from Jay. A 2012 Chevy Savannah 3500 V8. This gets used to transport items to trade shows, and those are ending soon. Should I change the oil before putting it to bed for the winter, or should that be the first thing in the spring, or both?
Yeah. If that oil has not been freshly changed this year, if it's getting even remotely close, change it now. And then you'll have less contamination. There's a little bit of acid formation. You know, there's contaminants that are in that oil. I'd get rid of it now, and then then you don't have to do it in the spring.
So you don't have to do it in the spring.
Correct.
Okie doke.
Yeah.
Back to the phones, and Martha in Gansevoort. Martha, you're on.
Yes. I had a 2004 Forester that the undercarriage rusted it out, and it wouldn't pass inspection. And I had to get a secondhand Pontiac Vibe 2008. And I was wondering, you know, the bottom doesn't look bad, but I'm really terrified of having it rust out. Now, is there any treatment that would help to keep it from rusting out?
Yeah, there are some products that can be applied to an older car that is even already starting to rust with surface rust all over the place. And that stuff can be sprayed on with the type of applicator that they use for undercoating and lower panel. They call it body schutz or stone guard or chip guard. And they're kind of a high paraffin, semi-oil-based products that can go directly on already rusted metals.
Huh.
One of them is called fluid film. And they work great.
And where do you find that stuff?
Auto parts stores.
Really?
For the most part, yeah, is where you'll find stuff like that.
Well, does that mean you'd have to put them on yourself?
Well, you'd have to have somebody apply it. It would want to go up on a lift, and somebody with the guns that spray the stuff out would apply it.
If you brought it to your mechanic and said, here are some cans of this stuff, can you do it?
You can buy it in spray cans as well. So, yes, you could apply it by hand with spray cans and cover up all those rusty parts.
How much would you have to get for an undercarriage?
Depends on how much exposed metal there is, because that's a unibody car, so you wouldn't have to do the whole underside of the car, just the subframes and maybe control arms and stuff like that.
Right.
Have your mechanic raise it up and give you an idea what kind of shape it's in.
Yeah, you definitely want an expert at least to advise you before you try this, Martha.
Oh, I couldn't do it myself. I know I would have to. But I just didn't know whether there was any hope of protecting it.
There is, yeah. Yep.
And it can be washed at a car wash, the undercarriage, after you put this on?
I mean,
not right after, but...
It will eventually wear away and thin off. But it does. I put it on one of my vehicles last fall, and it still looks great.
Really?
Now. Yeah, and I drove it all over the place in the snow and in the slush, and, you know...
I'll try that.
Yeah.
And did you have to get the, like this Vibe, I took 10 times to the car wash this winter, and I thought maybe I'm overdoing it. But, I mean, if you get the fluid film, how often would you have to go to the car wash in the winter?
Well, it's still a good idea to get the accumulated salt and junk out from under there. And your hope is when that thing lights up saying this car gets the underbody spray, it's really spraying it, but it's definitely a good thing to do.
All right, Martha, thank you so much for the call, and we now go over to Susan in New Paltz. Susan, you're on.
Hi. My question's a little different because it's not about an engine. About 6 years ago, my son borrowed my Prius and went to the store, and when he came back, he explained to me that a container of milk spilled all over the floor of the car. And before anything happened, instead of mopping it up, he actually put water to dilute it, which was probably the worst thing to do. Now, this is years ago, and I have tried every single thing possible, and people have said, you just need to sell the car. You can't get the smell of milk ever out of a car. And when it gets warm out, you can't even sit in the car. The smells so bad.
I know.
Still after years.
Yep. Yeesh.
So what can I do?
You're not completely out of hope.
Well, that doesn't sound too optimistic.
That's good.
Well,
that's good.
What it's going to have to do, you're going to have to take it to a detail shop. And I'm talking a detail shop that has the steam vacuums that, You know, like Stanley's steamer.
Why can't you get your own steam vacuum? a lot of people have them for
yeah,
their rugs.
Yeah, I don't know if they're powerful enough. I mean, these industrial ones are quite the machines.
Yeah.
And in some cases, depending on where this milk spilled, a lot of these real pro details will take all the seats out of the car.
Oh, I see.
And really...
It's on the floor. It's on the passenger seat floor is where it spilled.
If it's in one confined area, not under the seats or anything, that's what it's going to have to get... a steam treatment with disinfecting chemicals and all this stuff.
Oh, boy.
But there are, in some cases, that you have to pull the carpet up and get rid of the padding under it.
Just cut the carpet out.
That is possible to re-carpet the vehicle. It's a thick padding under there, but if the car is good, it'd be worth it. But I would try the detailer with the super steam treatment. Get the whole interior done.
Little Febreze wouldn't do it?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No, I've tried everything.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, Susan.
Thank you so much.
Good luck. That's terrible. Oh, boy, that stinks.
Have you ever smelled a car with spilt milk in it?
Well, I have 5 kids. I've smelled a lot of things in cars.
And you know it all.
Yes, indeed. Michelle in Pine Bush. Michelle, you're on.
Hi, Gordon. I was wondering if you have ever had any experience with a product called Seal-A-Jet. I just purchased a 2017 Volkswagen Tiguan and had it applied as an option, and I'm just wondering if you've ever heard of it.
Tell me the brand name again.
Seal-A-Jet. It's supposed to be a product that's used on airplanes to keep the exterior protected.
Seal-A-Jet. Like a like a jet airplane.
Oh, I'll be darned.
What a catchy term that is. Yeah, wow.
Cha-ching.
It's probably just another very high-end wax coating that goes on the car. It wasn't sprayed on the car like a clear coat, so it's probably just a high-quality chemical coating, maybe some Teflon in it and stuff. But I haven't heard of that.
It's warranted for 6 years.
In other words, you don't have to apply it again for 6 years?
Correct.
Yeah.
And if there's any damage, you can bring it back and it gets, fixed for free.
Yeah. This was the old test for if your car still has a good coat of wax on it. And it's how the water beads up. And if a car is freshly waxed and you shower it with a hose, all these beads of water are on the surface rather than it sheeting off and going flat.
Yeah.
So have you noticed, does your car bead water?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
If it continues to do that, the stuff is still there. If it starts to flatten out and not bead, get it reapplied.
Okay.
Use that warranty.
Had no idea they waxed airplanes. That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back over to Chris in Albany. Chris, you're next.
Yes, I do. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a subject you may have touched on before. It's about disc brake assemblies. I have a 2008 Ford Ranger. Low miles, only got 16,000. I don't drive in the winter. I took it in for inspection in January. Well, I did drive it that day. But the front brakes were non-effective. They crumbled. There was no wear on the discs. They just crumbled.
Rust? You mean they got terribly rusty?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm with you there, Chris. Yep. Had that problem, too.
Very I shouldn't say everybody,
and
but very common.
Are there different grades? I think you mentioned once there's a big difference in the grades of these brake assemblies.
Yeah. You're talking the brake disc, the brake rotor, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. What I do on some vehicles, if they're available, is get a coated rotor. You can get them painted, you can get them bare, or you can get them coated. And the coated ones have like a, it's not a galvanized coating, but it's, I think they dip these things after they produce them. And that seems to hold the rust away the longest. But the problem is the surface areas where the brake pads are applying, where the brake pads are riding on the rotors, that's going to be bare cast iron because that's how they have to stop. So the surfaces, the coatings will not protect. It'll protect the rust from creeping in from around and on the edges. So the vehicle needs to be driven regularly to keep that surface corrosion wiped off.
Okay, that's probably my situation.
Yeah, very common. We replace more brake rotors because of rust than wear out.
So it doesn't matter in a make or the brand that you buy.
You can buy super high-end rotors, but I don't think they'll make them from your Ranger, are high alloy or stainless steel, and they won't rust, but I don't think you can buy them for that vehicle.
Oh, okay.
All right, Chris, we're out of time, but thank you so much for the call. Gordon Friggy, that was unbelievable.
We had a lot of good questions today.
And we have 9-10 people on the line, and I apologize to everybody who didn't get through. I guess we have to do the show a little more often.
Well, I'm good with that.
Well, you're busy, too, at the shop.
Yeah. Well, this is a good break. It's a lot of fun coming here.
Well, we'll have you back in October. Yeah. We'll do as well as we can.
That's great.
Support for WAMC comes from Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, supplying the greater capital region with custom display solutions, commercial casework, and interactive exhibits for trade shows, special events at museum exhibitions, empireexhibits.com. George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts. Family-owned and operated for over 75 years, serving western Massachusetts with propane at full-service heating and plumbing installation, services, and deliveries. GeorgePropane.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond. Skidmore.edu/Tang. And Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, Saratoga Springs, New York, presenting You Who, Mrs. Goldberg, Sunday, September 24th at 7 p.m. Panel discussion and reception to follow. SaratogaSinai.org for details. Thanks again to Gordon Friggy for being here today. Thanks to you for some terrific calls. And again, apologies to those folks left on the line. We'll do it again next month. Thanks to our engineer today, Jordan Taylor. Jim Lavoulis is our producer. Deb Malik took your calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, get this, marks the start of the fall season, so Food Friday will be about apples and cider. How can you lose? I don't know. We'll find out tomorrow. Stand by now for news.